I'm Reinhard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 196 for the weekend starting 27 October 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, US tech stocks are going bananas.
Also this week, SAP comes clean, another submarine cable is coming, and iPhone 10 demand.
It's Friday, it's time to do what we do best, talk tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard?
How's it, Duncan?
So we're joined today by a very old friend. I think, Richard, I've known you for about 20 years, if not longer.
It's probably around about that long, yeah. Duncan, yes.
Yeah. Richard Fearon, local IT industry, how can I describe
it? Warhorse.
Warhorse is a good word for it. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for inviting me, Richard. Thank you.
What are you up to these days, Richard?
Well, looking for trouble, looking for money. I mean, nothing's changed in 30 years, really. I have a belief or a motto that says "Rerum novarum cupidus." Roughly translated, that means fascinated by new things. So, anything that's new, anything that can bring about big change from a technology point of view, not even limited to IT or plumbing or stuff that I see as kind of boring these days, to be honest. You know, anything from biotech to
drones.
UAVs to Internet of Things to alternative energy to too many things, I would say, would be the best way to describe that, Duncan, actually.
Right. You've been doing quite a bit of stuff with the CSIR as well. Tell us about that.
My time that I was with CSIR as an entrepreneur in residence was really a very, very interesting time. It was almost 4 years. And, you know, having a look at what the country is able to produce and the level of innovation that is possible, to me, was wonderful. I mean, the CSIR, from my point of view, deserves to have more brand equity than our rugby team, quite frankly, in terms of what it does for the country or what it can potentially do for the country. However, you know, organs of state, I think, are organs of state, and we all understand the challenges that they face right now, and I just hope that it can continue to have the level of relevance that it's had since 1947, and yeah, that's my wish for the CSIR in any event.
So I remember, I think it was the first press trip overseas I ever went on was with you, Richard. We went to we went to Barcelona.
The stories.
There's some stories around. We probably shouldn't relate them on this podcast.
There were some very interesting stories, actually. I think I'm the only person who had a press trip, we won't say which press trip, where one party didn't return and got married during the press trip.
Good grief. Yes,
I'll leave that one out there.
We know you are. I won't say the name. No, I'm a good friend, so I know.
I don't know the story. I'm going to have to ask you.
We'll take this offline and talk to you about this afterwards.
But yeah, Barcelona was fun, I must say. We didn't spend too much time at the press conference.
No, the press conference was rather secondary. You know, I mean, if we go back to the press conference of the day, you know, it was a case of if one had one at the Barberton Center, one would go and have a look and see if some people had vomited in the toilets. And if the journalist had, it was deemed to be a success. Yes, that would kind of describe it quite aptly, yes.
I think this industry has become, a little more tame.
Yeah, it's certainly not the press trips. Those are the press trips that I remember fondly, and they don't make them like they used to. But maybe that's also because you're not so hands-on anymore, Richard, in that industry.
Well, you know, one has to hand over the baton sometime, I guess. Yeah. the power is in the hands of the media, gentlemen, and the media can dictate its terms.
Yeah.
And so it should, because that keeps us honest.
Yeah, these days it's all online. It was, we didn't have deadlines the next day or even the next week. Now you're at a international press conference and the pressure is there to file before the press conference is even finished. So much more work, much less play, unfortunately.
It's a different thrill, and I do like it. I do like it. Mm.
I recall the very first connected online press conference that I was part of. It even made the Sunday Times. Yeah, so yeah, the excitement was great. Holding the wires together in the background was rather interesting. I think some of the journalists who didn't take part deemed it to be a bit of a fraud because people were given something for taking part. So, I'm not quite sure, whether they were right or wrong, or I was right or wrong. But if we look at it today, We've certainly moved to where everything is online. We've certainly moved to where, you know, the Friday morning breakfasts aren't what they used to be, and, you know, people don't drink as much, and they're certainly a lot fitter. And, you know, so I guess on balance, you know, the relationship between vendors and the tech media has moved with the times, you know.
It has changed quite dramatically in the last 20 years, that's for sure. I remember when back in the 90s when there were two, when I was starting my career, there were two main tech titles in South Africa, Computer Week and Computing SA. Those are weekly newspapers that were warring with each other. And you're right, it was hard work during the week, and then Friday we all let it go. but now it's the deadline is all the time.
24/7.
So, before we get into the week's news, Rachab, let's do our quiz. Do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. The first question in this week's quiz. A new submarine cable is headed to South Africa's shores. What is it called?
Which two technology industry titans are dueling for title of world's richest person?
Third question. What is the name of SAP board member who is dealing with the company's Gupta kickback scandal in South Africa?
If spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz band was released immediately, what would the price of a 1 gigabyte data bundle fall to, according to MTN South Africa CEO Godfrey Motsa?
And the last question. AMD has a new line of desktop processors that it's hoping to help gain market share from rival Intel. What is the processor line called?
That's our quiz. As always, we'll get back to the answers to that at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's tech news. And it's, as the ambulances and cop cars go flying past outside, it's U.S. tech reporting season at the moment. And last night we saw numbers, quarterly numbers out of Microsoft and Amazon, and they, after the bell, as they call it in the States, and both companies smashing and the consensus analyst forecasts, and both shares surging in after-hours trading. Those markets are opening in a couple of hours of the time of this recording. And Amazon and Microsoft both look set to hit new all-time highs, propelling the personal fortunes of their respective founders to new highs as well, Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos. I think both worth of around $90 billion each, assuming that the markets, these shares open at the sort of levels that they are trading in pre-market. But $90 billion, I mean, if you convert that to Rand, it makes these guys trillionaires. It's astonishing amounts of money, and it's incredible to see how these big tech stocks have risen over the last 5 years. I mean, if you look back to after the financial crisis in 2008-2009 and how these companies have soared, I mean, the amount of revenue generation is or wealth creation that's come out of them is absolutely fascinating. Of course, it's not just the American companies. We're seeing the big Chinese internet stocks. We were talking just before we started recording about Tencent. And, of course, Naspers is touching all new all-time highs as well. But Microsoft, doing incredibly well on the back of their decision quite a few years ago now to focus on cloud. So every part of their business firing on all cylinders, Office, Windows, Azure in particular. Data center revenues year on year rising 90%.
Wow.
Amazon producing also similarly strong numbers from the Amazon Web Services business. But those two companies are in a neck and neck battle now for
it really is. Those companies that aren't offering the cloud services are going to fall behind. I mean, we often speak about how great Office Online is and Adobe Online, you know, the Creative Cloud Suite, you know, the stuff that allows you instant access to what you need without having to pay overhead or pay a yearly license. If you want it for a month, you can get it for a month. If you want it for a few hours, you can probably arrange that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Microsoft made some clever moves. You know, I think acquiring Skype was a clever move. Actually, you know, it's a long-term game for them, and if one looks at one's Office subscription now, there's 60 free minutes to any telephone in the world. Telephone, my goodness, I'm showing my age. Right, to any connected device in the world.
Die draadloos.
Die draadloos, goed, ja. You know, and I think some of the things that they're doing there, right, you know, they can build very, very well on.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot more integration, right, not just from a Microsoft point of view, but from a general point of view to things like LinkedIn. I think those platforms haven't fired yet either. You know, we think that they have. They haven't really. You know, I think that with as connectivity becomes more ubiquitous, and available, and we can do things that are high quality, I think we're going to see, you know, combined with the cloud aspect of it, I think we're going to see some space rocket action, right, in that particular area. And, you know, I mean, I can remember when Microsnot and Puklet Hackard, yes. Microsnot made the changes and became something wonderful. They stopped making software that was as reliable as a one-legged man at an ass-kicking party and went into something that's pretty relevant. Yeah? Respect, yep. you know, for whoever did that. I mean, I remember when you used to run early Windows, it would stop working, and I used to draw the analogy of BMW selling a car that would just stop in the middle of the road, where one had to get out, open and close the doors, open and close the bonnet, kick the tires three times, flash the lights, and then it may restart again. Well, you know, mercifully, we've moved beyond those days, and, you know, I think Microsoft deserves the position that it's had, because it's turned itself into a, you know, an organization that delivers stuff that's robust and reliable, and yeah, they've moved beyond the early days of paying no dividends as well. So,
I must say, I was, and plenty of people were skeptical about the move to software as a service. I thought, you know, why on earth would I want to pay for the software year in and year out when I could just buy a perpetual license? I was very wrong. Software as a service has been an incredible success, and not only for Microsoft. You mentioned Adobe as well with the Creative Suite, and we're seeing it in the share prices. It actually makes sense, and I actually like renting software now. It makes more sense.
Yeah. It doesn't feel as foreign as what it used to be. I mean, you can pay a lot less in the case of Outlook as a service, or even the Office, you know, under $100 in some cases. It's not as expensive what we thought. You know, paying perpetually, yes, you are paying all the time like you'd be paying off a car, but the benefits are always a lot of software. You really get good support, and they love bundling new features with the software, because it's incentive for them to make sure it's the best version it can be all the time.
Yeah.
You know, Rahul, I think there's a distinct difference between cars and software. You know, cars generally, right, are hardware, and they depreciate, right, and they become worthless. If one goes to software as a service, if it doesn't work, one can stop paying for it. Mm. Right? You can't stop paying for the car.
Except the vehicle industry is maybe getting transformed as well through this service model, a la Uber.
Yes.
Millennials today, according to research that I've seen, don't want to buy stuff anymore. They don't want to own a car. You know, if they want to get a ride in a fancy Merc S-Class, they'll haul out their app and their Uber app, and they'll call up an Uber. What do they call it? An Uber.
Uber Black.
And you know, so it's potentially not just the software industry that's going to be transformed by this as a service type of model, but other industries as well.
Yeah. Oh. Let's not forget, software makes it possible. I mean, the software still drives it. You know, the app is a software based. The artificial intelligence is going to make this car potentially drive on its own from point A to point B. That's going to be software. So, and it works hand in hand.
I mean, I attended a conference yesterday. Company's name is HERE. It's part of Microsoft, I believe. Yeah.
It's the old
Navtech.
It was mapping software. I didn't realize Microsoft owned it.
They acquired it, if I'm speaking under correction now. It was first sold, Navtech was first sold to Nokia for between 7 and 9 billion euro. I can't quite remember. And then it was part of Nokia when Microsoft went in and sent in their man, who I can't remember his name offhand, to destroy Nokia's value, which he did very, very well with the cooperation of the then-time CEO called Olli Pekka, somebody who I can't remember. And
I remember him.
When they sold Nokia in its entirety, right, to Microsoft, when the deal finally went down, I think it went down for about $4 billion. From 9 billion euro, or 7 to 9 billion, I think that was the range, to buy a mapping company, to selling the entire Nokia into Microsoft 5 years later for 4 billion, right, was a spectacular feat, I think, actually. Yeah? What more can one say? You know, Microsoft started in that area, I think, to try and promote phone sales, right, of Microsoft phones. That was the rationale behind doing the deal at the time, if I'm not mistaken. And it's now, well, Microsoft, I don't think, care much about phones, to be honest, unless I'm missing the point there.
They've given up on it.
Yeah, they've given up on it, like they did many other hardware things, but they're so big in software that their hardware failures were unnoticeable, actually, in context of their overall revenue and their investments. But when I have a look at what they're looking at now, right, and, you know, they're a bit behind the curve, I have to say, but You know, they talk about amazing things that are going to happen. They talked about them yesterday. Well, most of those things are actually happening. And they're going to this open portal standard where they're going to not only be concerned now with things that move around, as in vehicles, but things that are firmly planted, and the Internet of Things is becoming part of what location is about. Mm-hmm. Location doesn't necessarily mean one's moving, and it's taken them a little while to get that. And there are only a couple of players in the world that can actually step up and do that job properly. And looking at what Microsoft has in terms of its overall back-end infrastructure, I mean, Amazon could do the same. Mm-hmm. They've got the pervasiveness of customer base. They've got the plumbing. They've got the technology. They've got the server farms. So there are only a couple of players that can actually go out there and take that high ground. So I was watching, you know, that development with great interest, having been involved in Garmin, you know, for some years previously at a senior level, and looking at what they were peddling then and looking at what they're peddling now, well, you know, we're still peddling some of the same stuff, but it's hardly relevant to their revenue and hardly relevant to their future revenue models. So, you know, and another thing that I noticed, which was very interesting on their sheet, and well, none of the automotive people saw it, I don't believe, is that they have a key partnership with DJI, world leader in UAVs and drones. So we can see that there are things happening right there that I think are going to be very, very interesting into the future.
I was curious. I just looked up on Wikipedia who currently owns here. It's owned by a whole consortium of car companies and others.
Intel.
Intel bought in this year, that's right. GIC Private, and then Tencent, NavInfo, Mercedes, BMW, and Audi. Interesting collection of companies.
It was all owned at one stage, if I'm not mistaken, Duncan. I could be mistaken, by Nokia and then subsequently Microsoft. So Microsoft.
Not according to this. Okay. Wikipedia doesn't mention Microsoft specifically, so I think that may have been excluded from the Nokia sale. They were owned, or certainly Navtech was a big investor.
Navtech? Well, Navtech was the company, the original company.
Right. Yes. So that they were the investor from 85 to 2007. So they've been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then Nokia from 2007 to 2015, and then in 2015, Audi, BMW, and Merck bought into it. And then subsequent to that, we've seen NavInfo, Tencent, and Intel buying in as well.
You see what's happening there. Mm-hmm. It's happening. You know, coming back to your automotive point. Mm. You know, cars into the future will not be owned.
Yeah.
In whatever way they're presented. I mean, Sweden, where if I'm in Sweden, I take out my credit card, I walk up to a car, stick it in, I take it off the pole where it's charging, I drive it to where I want to go, I put it down and I push the app and then I walk away and I get the bill. That's quite a convenient way for me if I really need a car. Well, no one doesn't really need a car in Gothenburg, to be honest. You know, if you really need a car, then one can do it like that.
Yeah, there's a couple of cities around the world that do that now. I think Vancouver's one as well. You just get an app, you say, I want this vehicle, hop in, drive it wherever you want, and leave it there.
Yeah.
Next guy comes along, picks it up, off he goes.
I love it.
I'm not sure that would work in South Africa. But
well, you know, the law and order is somewhat of a challenge at the moment. I think there could be some appropriation of asset incidents taking place, no matter what software one puts in there.
Suddenly you see all these cars heading for the Mozambique border.
They're going to have a problem when they get there. there's nowhere to plug them in.
But also, let's not forget, you know, once these cars, you know, are remotely accessible, you know, if anybody sees irregular use, they just switch the car off remotely and then kill it, you know, and then I guess I'm sure they can build in these safety switches, but we're not quite there yet for South Africa.
We've been able to do that for a long time. The law prohibits tracking companies from turning cars off.
Really?
Yes.
In South Africa specifically? Or?
I don't know. I know that in South Africa that is the case. I don't know about the rest of the world.
That's interesting.
Accidents and liability incidents and the thing stopping in the middle of a junction.
Yeah.
Well, quite frankly, if it's been nicked, you know... Yeah, but then there's the other party, the innocent party, who may be involved in that, which one has to always consider in the balance of probability and the outcome. But we can do those things. Mm. We've been able to do them for some time, but it's not allowed.
Yeah. So Amazon, the other company that reported quarterly results last night, and share price also surging, I think up 8% in pre-market trading at the moment. Company's worth $500 billion. This is a humble little retailer, that online retailer that started in the mid-90s. And Richard, you were saying before we started podcasting, many people thought Jeff Bezos was crazy.
They did indeed.
He
They were wrong.
They were certainly wrong, that's for sure. Richest man in the world now, depending on what Microsoft's share price does today. But it looks like he's going to end the day as the world's richest man.
I didn't believe he was crazy at all. You know, he was very fortunate, right? If one has a look at what happened with the dot bomb, he started just before or thereabouts.
Yeah, late 90s, I think they... 96, 97, if I remember.
So the dot bomb came and everybody went, oh, this online retailing stuff is all nonsense and that's a fail. And nobody looked at him. He had a wonderful environment, right, in which to start to build something that had a major competitive advantage. And it didn't take him long to realize that the competitive advantage wasn't actually in the retailing per se. It was taking the tools that they developed for their own use, polishing those tools and making them available, right, to the market in general, right, and a bit of a Trojan horse, really, if one looks at it, because at some stage one will directly or indirectly be working with your competitors, their data, right, and you know their metadata, and you know one's able to draw some good intelligence from that. I think, I mean, I have a tremendous amount of respect for what he's done, and you know what's remarkable to me is that when one speaks to people generally about Amazon today, you know, they believe that Amazon's fortunes, right, were built on and rest on online retailing. They don't. They rest on infrastructure. They rest on systems.
Yeah.
Things that properly work. Amazon Cloud, I mean,
yes.
You know, that's probably the most in the biotech industry and then the health industry. Amazon Cloud is the one that's trusted. Microsoft never got trusted there.
It's the biggest cloud provider in the world. Microsoft's chasing them hard, but they've got some serious catching up to do still. But it's not, I mean, that Amazon Web Services business has been unbelievably successful. But even on the retail side, I mean, they've built these mega warehouses. They're talking about transforming the logistics, and they have transformed logistics. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the robots inside these distribution centers, the software behind it.
How they sort their products. I mean, that's all genius stuff. You know, it's stuff that figure out of necessity rather than let's build something because it's business.
I think we have to be quite clear, though, guys, that they perfected it. They didn't
invent it.
No, they didn't. And the company that took it first was Apple, and that was in their Apeldoorn warehouse in Amsterdam. But in those days, it was very expensive, right? It was a very closed system. Things were very customized. There weren't any economies of scale. It was just Apple and Apple stuff. And you know, I remember going into that warehouse, and the entire warehouse for Europe, Middle East, and Africa was two men.
You raise an interesting point, though, Richard. In tech, and that's probably the case in other industries as well, it's never the guys who invent it. But in many instances, it's not the guys who invent it who actually go on to become the big players in that space. It's the guys who take something that's been invented and then perfect it. Microsoft did not invent the operating system for desktops. They basically cribbed CPM. But they were so successful in how they brought it to market and business model. Yeah, the business model was so incredibly successful for them. Apple did not invent the smartphone, but it took something that was flawed and perfected it, and it has become the most successful consumer product in history. I mean, you can think of so many examples.
Well, I mean, I have an analogy that I used to use sometimes when opening talks that I gave when I was talking to all of the clever PhDs and learning how clever they are. You know, I would ask people to say, okay, well, please, do you agree, put up your hands if you agree, that the Wright brothers invented powered flight? And they'd all put their hands up, and I would say, no, you're actually all wrong. They didn't. Other men invented it and died trying to make it sustainable. The Wright brothers simply made it sustainable. And that's the kind of analogy that you're using right now to say, you know, the people ask me the question, how many businesses have you started? That isn't the right question. The question is, how many businesses have you been involved in, right, that have worked sustainably? That's the real question. Because starting things is easier than making them sustainable. And it's massive leaps in innovation, okay, that make them sustainable, actually, if we look at the examples that you've raised. So it really is, that's what it is, yeah? And I wonder what the next thing is going to be, you know? I mean, if I look back at the big things in my life, you know, I mean, I remember in the very building we're sitting in right now in 1987, putting down a web server here. And I remember having discussions with my then-time investors and saying to them, there are three people at the table, and they will give us 51% of this consortium, right, to be an to be a relevant internet service provider. And the view then was, well, you know, I think this internet thing's going to be a little bit like CB radios. I'm not interested. You know, it's when you have the people who have the vision, right, the Ronnie Abtegas of this world, who stepped into that thing and took it forward, right, and took the chances and made the business model work and made the market. Yeah,
yeah.
I think those are the guys that win. Yeah. So it's I mean, I hope I'm around and in decent health, right, and for another few years, you know, probably into my 90s, because I don't even think we've seen anything happen yet, right, from a tech point of view at all.
That was the question I was going to pose next. We've seen this massive run-up in tech stocks, especially in the US. And, I mean, they're sitting on PE multiples. I mean, Microsoft sitting on a PE multiple of 30.
I was going to say 30, yeah.
Yeah. Adobe, 58. You know, these are expensive stocks. But the question is, it has cloud and software as a service transformed this industry in such a way that these sort of multiples are sustainable? And are we going to continue to see this sort of growth? Where is Amazon? Here it is. Amazon's price to earnings multiple before the markets open today. Have a guess, Richard.
40, 45?
245.
Okay. It's interesting. The answer is, I don't know, but I have a view. Let's go back 4 years to when I first became involved in biotech. I mean, involved in is a very loose term. I'm by no means an expert, but 4 years ago when I became involved in US biotech, that's where biotech happens, I was looking at things very carefully. And in that year, between Apple, Amazon, and Google, they employed more cell biologists than the entire pharma industry. Where's the sustainability for these companies going to come from? It ain't going to come from plumbing. It ain't going to come from hardware. These companies all have connected customers that will have permission, that will have trust. Mm. Healthcare, right, as we know it, will be the thing that drives and sustains their values. Mm. Right, and if we look at how that will happen, you know, and I'm being very, very sort of futuristic and Tofflerish and outrageous in my views. But, you know, the only way that we can move from a world where we have this disparity that exists is to, and where we have 10% of the people in the world that do 100% of the work and 90% that don't, right, is through these platforms, is through these amplifying and making the efficiencies, right, and being able to provide healthcare, right, that keeps the population of the world stable. And that's what is going to sustain them, in my view, into their next round of value. So they may not grow as quickly as they have, but the values that they have, I believe, for the most part, right, can be sustained if they pick the right associations and they move into the right application areas. Mm. That would be my view on it.
Interesting. I mean, that healthcare side of things, Apple, Google, through Alphabet, they're all investing big money in it. You know, you're right. The aging populations, rich populations in these developed markets, huge potential to fuse technology and healthcare to make people live longer and healthier lives. And the opportunity there must be absolutely enormous.
Again, that talks back to the recently announced National Health and Fitness Initiative in China. The nation will stay healthy and fit. India, right, is rolling out something similar. When you have one third of the world's population plus another third of the world's population moving into these connected health areas, there has to be a sustainable upside, right, for those who own the plumbing, the platforms, the relationships, the trust, the vendor relationships for the drugs. You know, all of that stuff will change for us. You know, the ability to scrape inside your mouth, right, and just upload it to a cloud. The ability to actually self-blood test. You can prick your own finger as a diabetic. We can do it We do it for other reasons. Drop it into a reader. We can test immediately for 8 diseases. That stuff is real, guys. It's happening.
Your next iPhone is actually literally going to draw your blood.
Literally going to draw your blood, yeah.
Financial incident.
So out of interest, I've just pulled up the share graphs for the big tech companies in the States, and I'm obviously missing a few here, but I've pulled up the share graphs for Alphabet, which is Google, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, and Apple. Let's start with the worst performer out of those five. Who would you guess of those five companies was the worst performer over 5 years?
List again, please, sir.
Google, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Facebook.
No. The worst performer over 5 years is Apple, up 82%. Any guesses on the best performer?
Well, it has to be Amazon based on its PE.
I would say Facebook.
It's Facebook. Facebook up 800% over 5 years.
They're basically like every person on Earth on their platform.
So it really shows, guys, that I don't understand the markets properly, and I got an FX for maths and matric.
But interesting to see Apple is such a laggard compared to those other big tech companies, and it's the only one there that's it's the only one there that's a hardware company mainly.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
However, if you have the hardware base and you've sweated the blood to build it, you're in the best position to capitalize on it from a service point of view.
Which is what they're trying to do now.
Yes.
So that picture could look very different over the next 5 years.
I learned that in the printer business. People say, why are you in printers?
Yeah, to sell ink.
Printers were awful. Yeah, because suppliers. Yeah. First annuities business, proper annuity business in the high-tech sector.
Yes.
Right?
How do you think Hewlett-Packard got so big?
Yeah, and why did they get so small? Maybe that's another program.
Yeah, well, they're two companies now.
Oh, my favorites, Pewlett Hackard. Employ people from HP. Say, I wouldn't employ anybody from HP. They don't know how to headbutt for market share. It's okay, I've been on the record before on that one. And I survived. There were various attempts on my life here.
Yeah, so interesting one. So the best performer, Facebook, then Amazon, up 300%. Then Google up almost 200%, and then Apple. Microsoft is the fourth best performer, second worst performer after Apple. But
fourth best and second worst, that's a wonderful description.
But Microsoft beating Apple over 5 years.
Sure.
More than double the performance of Apple. Which just shows you how successful that cloud strategy has been.
Yeah.
If they're outperforming Apple on the share market.
You know, the scary thing is, Apple had the high ground there and they didn't capitalize. I still get my stupid bill for R44 a month from Ireland for iCloud.
Yes.
What was wrong with you? What were you smoking?
Why did they get iCloud so wrong? No one uses it. Who uses iCloud anymore?
I do to keep some things connected, and I don't know how it works, so I just leave it on in case I destroy something. I mean, that's one of the that's hardly a basis for a sustainable business in the cloud, is it, having customers that won't turn it off in case their shit breaks?
Great. Well, let's move on. There's lots more to talk about, and SAP is in the news, coming back to South Africa.
Does anybody know what it really stands for?
Systems, applications, products.
Wonderful. How innovative
German,
is that?
Yeah? The German equivalent thereof. I'm not sure what German is for systems, applications, products. But they've got themselves into a lot of hot water down here over this these alleged kickbacks. They are so concerned about them that they have in fact reported them. They've said they've found evidence of kickbacks being paid to Gupta-owned companies. And they have reported this matter to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission and to the U.S. Department of Justice for further investigation. Now, these two American organizations are entities that you don't want to mess with. They are in charge of, particularly the DOJ, is in charge of enforcing the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which is a very, very serious piece of legislation that, if you are found to be in contravention of, you facing a lot of time behind bars. I think they're making the right moves, SAP. They've moved quickly once the reports emerged, I think back in July, that there was potential malfeasance in their South African office. They've now actually broken it down in figures and published numbers of saying the scale of these alleged kickbacks to these Gupta-owned companies And the investigation is continuing. They've, of course, hired Baker McKenzie, which is an international law firm, to do this investigation. And this is going to continue for a period of time in parallel with the investigations that are now being launched in the U.S. What I found interesting at the press conference that SAP held this week was that they have not reported any of this to the South African authorities yet. Nor is there there wasn't any immediate evidence that the South African authorities are investigating this, although I've seen a subsequent report saying that the Hawks have started to look into it. It's a big mess for SAP. I think they're handling it well, though. I think that they had to come out and be transparent, and they had to get an independent third party to look into this. And now that they've found evidence of malfeasance and kickbacks, etc., to secure government business here in South Africa. The fact that they've now placed three of the people who had been put on administrative leave on suspension, I think they've made the right moves. Hasso Plattner, the founder of SAP, has publicly apologized to South Africa for this mess. In general, I think they're doing the right thing. Richard, I don't know if you have a view on this.
You know, it's always very difficult when one has these occurrences. I don't think that one can deal with it any other way. And I think other organizations would have done well to learn that this is the only way to deal with things, is openly and transparently. And I mean, I go back to my value system that back in the day when we shipped 500,000 map sets that had viruses in them on SD cards. What do? You tell the people what's happened and you manage it.
Don't pretend it didn't
happen. Pretend it didn't happen, you know. And I think a lot of corporates are good at pretending that things didn't happen. I'll look at, you know, the impact of this, the known impact that they've disclosed, which you've, you know, shared with us, the figures and things. I think I'm worried that that is the tip of an iceberg. You know, if we have a look at the very core of things that SAP enables, and we have a look at, right, the technology hacks, right, that we've heard about, we haven't been given evidence of them, where various ports and things have been left open at the back end of stuff, right, so that payments can be processed, etc. And this may not or may not be in the reports, but I think it's important to know that these are the type of conversations that are taking place, that these things have allegedly happened. Mm-hmm. Does it go beyond government, actually? You know, do they know where it starts and where it ends? That's my concern, you know, for the country. It's a mess for SAP, but it's equally a mess, right, for SA.
When
such things are reported to those authorities, it has an impact on the country as well. But we have to take that medicine, unfortunately, because we have parties in positions here, right, who were prepared to do the things that were done here, you know, to collaborate and work with, right, people that are not savory people.
And so they're still in political office.
They're still in political office, absolutely correct. And it comes back to your question, Duncan, you know, or your observation that there was nothing reported to the South African authorities. I'm making an assumption here, right, but I think that if I were on SAP's side of the chessboard, I would be going, well, is there any point? All it's going to do is sap resources from us. And if there's not going to be any result or any proper attention given to it, let's just walk back, right, through into the lion's mouth in the U.S., and let's deal with it in an environment where, yes, we may end up in a very bad position, okay, but we can stand up at the end of it and say, we've done what we needed to do. Our reputation is intact to the extent we've taken responsibility for the actions of our employees.
And the fact that they've taken that responsibility is probably the most important thing in the eyes of those who are going to be prosecuting this case, because if they tried to hide it, then it would have just made it so much worse for themselves, and they the consequences probably would have been much more dire for SAP.
I mean, if one looks at the level of dependence on SAP in corporate South Africa,
it's remarkable.
It's remarkable. Mm. It's big. It's very big. And, you know, what we don't want to do, right, is to have anything of this nature happen in any other place.
We saw what happened with KPMG. It's still happening with KPMG, with major corporate companies in South Africa firing them as auditors and saying, we don't want anything to do with you. But companies can't do that with SAP. Their software is so integrated into their day-to-day operations. It's so fundamental to their businesses that they actually don't have the option of saying, oh, sorry, SAP, we're not going to work with you anymore. We're going to install Oracle, because you can't just do that. You can't just lift it out.
No, no. It will cost you your business if you take that decision. And you have to take a balanced approach on these things, because it's a shareholder issue.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, auditors respectfully keep score.
Yeah.
You know, we can find a ref anywhere and a scoreboard. And I think that's the difference.
Yes. Indeed.
I think I'm not going to be liked by any of the audit firms, yeah. Even the one I do work with. So I won't mention their name, because there's no point. It's not that one, it's another
one. It's not KPMG.
No, it's not. It's not. It's, yeah. It's a reflection of the state of things in this country at this time.
There's a lot of mess that's going to have to be cleaned up once all this nonsense is over, and it's going to take a long time. But I think these sort of investigations start that process, and we're going to see these headlines for years as the full extent of the rot and corruption under this administration comes out. And hopefully people are going to go to jail, and there'll be consequences for some of the stuff that's happened here.
We can but hope. However, if we look at the parties, the known parties in these transgressions, okay, there hasn't been much action to date in terms of dealing with them.
No, not from local authorities.
From local authorities.
But with the FBI involved in some of these investigations now, the SEC, the US DOJ, and some British authorities as well, things could get quite interesting.
It could be a Bell Pottinger incident.
Right, let's take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, guys? How's it, Richard? How's it, Rechard?
How's it?
So we've got a new submarine cable coming to South Africa. I didn't think we needed any more, but there we go. I
mean, we can always use with more capacity.
That's true. And this is going along a route that there is no fiber cable at the moment. So it's going to run from South Africa, apparently from East London, which is interesting. It could be the first cable system landing in East London if they do deploy it there. It's going to be ready for service in 2019. It's being built by a company called IOX Cable, which is a Mauritian-based company. And it's going to connect all the Indian Ocean islands, Mauritius, Rodrigues, Reunion, and one or two others. And then it's going to run to India and then connect onward to Asian cables. So a new route more redundancy for South Africa. I am interested in the fact that it's coming to East London, though, because there's no other submarine cable systems to connect to there at the moment. I know Seacom and others have been talking about, for a long time, been talking about running a cable, an undersea cable from Cape Town to East London, and then, from Cape Town to PE to East London to Durban and to Mtanzini to connect all of the other undersea cables, WAX and SAFE and Seacom and all the others. My educated guess here is that if they are going to build to East London, that this would be part of a plan to build a cable system along the coast of South Africa as well.
Oh yeah.
Which would be the first one?
It would be.
Although no, it's not the first one. The old SAT-3 safe cable runs along the coast to North Australia.
Okay.
But that's a very low capacity cable.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, you can't compete with fiber on that.
Yeah, well, it is fiber, but it's very old technology.
Yeah.
SAT-2 was copper. SAT-3 was fiber.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've actually. It's fascinating. If you ever get the chance, by the way, go down to Melkbosstrand, north of Cape Town, where all these cables land. There in Azefontein, there's a little museum there that I think Telkom built, and you go in there, and it was at the landing station. There's a little room with all the old cables. Hmm. The original SAT-1 cable was about, I don't know, almost a foot thick metal. I mean, the thing must have cost an absolute fortune in today's money to build. And SAT-2 is also a big, fat piece of metal, copper cable, that deployed for 10,000 kilometers.
Wow.
And today's systems are much smaller. They're still wrapped in huge amounts of plastic and protective materials. Incredible if you get a chance to go up there. It's worth the drive. But, yeah, new cable coming, so more bandwidth. 54 Yay. Terabit per second design capacity, ultimate design capacity. So that should be enough to download the next iOS update.
Let's hope it works properly.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes. But Mauritius is an interesting place. Have you been to Mauritius, Richard?
Yes, I have.
It's getting hyper-connected.
20 years ago. It made some T-shirts,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it had pretty bad roads. And today it's, I believe, a very, very different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, from what I have been told about it, it is the gateway to African trade. The finance guarantees on payments in and out of the rest of Africa all run through there. And I don't know much about the underlying principles, you know, of its economy. I don't know who's invested there. I don't know whether it's real or not.
They have low tax rates, so they've attracted a lot of head offices of companies that operate in Africa. MTN has an office there. Seacom's head office is in there, although I don't think they're really based there. A lot of companies technically have their head offices
there.
A bit
like Schaffhausen in Switzerland, where you get a 2% tax rate.
Right.
And negotiated with the man.
But they're doing good things as well, from what I've seen. I've never been to Mauritius. I'd love to go. But it's not the first submarine cable. I think they built something called the Lion Cable there as well, which connects some of those islands to Madagascar, if I'm not mistaken, possibly up to the east coast of Africa. But it's an interesting place, and they're doing some interesting things to attract investment, specifically in the tech space.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there are some wonderful, wonderfully innovative company structures one can have there, right, between there and South Africa. And I look at those and I think to myself, I wonder who made those up then. You know, I mean, I'm no expert with these things, but when I look at things and you think, how does that work?
Yes.
How does it sustain? Yeah. I don't know. I like Mauritius. I mean, I enjoyed it there.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to go and do some research.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do some speed tests from the
10 days in Mauritius.
Scar calls.
Yeah. I'm sure you can justify
yeah,
that.
Yeah, business expense.
you know what's really incredible for me? On the cable side of things, I remember when it was the biggest news ever, and all of us were so psyched about a cable coming. Now we go, now it's a new bit of wire, bird. You know, it's really not an event, actually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, for me, the challenge we face is we've got all of this stuff around the edges and we've got bugger all in the middle.
Yes.
How do we serve the middle
yeah.
of Africa as yeah. a continent versus the edges?
Indeed.
Is a far bigger
yeah.
sort of challenge and a far bigger enabler.
Yeah.
And if one looks at the countries that have got that right and one looks at their cost of connectivity, places like Ghana, you know, on a graph compared to the rest of Africa, the scale is so out of whack, right? When you look at Ghana, you think there's no cost. It's just a very little thin line at the bottom. And, you know, I think there are some lessons to be learned from that as well. But the more and more cables that come in, right, the more and more availability there's going to be of connectivity.
Yeah.
And I think that'll drive the...
It'll drive the terrestrial fiber. Yeah, and I mean, Strive Masiyiwa, the guy who started Econet, is doing very well in doing exactly that with Liquid Telecom. It's wiring up, running fiber infrastructure all the way up through Africa. I think their stated intention is to wire up Africa from Cape to Cairo, and they're doing a lot of work.
That intention was shared with me by another lady that I know fairly well, a lady called Ellie Hargopian.
I know Ellie, yes.
Okay, so yeah, that's a statement from two ends. Okay. That's the mission. That's the mission, yeah.
And lastly, on the news front, Apple 10, iPhone 10 pre-orders have gone in. Richard, have you placed your pre-order?
Oh, man, no.
Because if you hadn't, you had. I think their pre-orders sold out in 10 minutes or 30 minutes.
I think I'll wait for the next wave when it's a bit cheaper. Maybe next year sometime when my contract lapses and I need to get a new one,
So pre-orders opened in the US and they were sold out in 30 minutes. Quite remarkable. But Apple is struggling to get the components it needs for the iPhone 10, and it's potentially a problem for them. There was a great piece we published on Bloomberg this week saying that Apple's had a rare miss on the logistics side of the operations, where Tim Cook historically has been very strong. They don't have, they haven't lined up all the screen components and other components, high-end components in this device to get sufficient volume to market.
Scale production volumes.
Yeah, and that's potentially a big problem, because that's the area where Apple has really excelled versus some of its competitors in the Android space. No doubt that they're working furiously to get these problems sorted out, and no doubt there'll be plenty of iPhone 10 stock in the market by next year. But it looks like you're going to have difficulty getting an iPhone 10 in time for Christmas, particularly down here in South Africa.
And didn't they also decrease the accuracy of their facial scanner to get the get the production out, because they couldn't increase the quantities?
Apparently, it's only a minor decrease in the quality, but still, Apple having to cut quality to get product out is not a good sign.
You know, if one looks at the material supply, component supply pipelines, you're having to take those positions 18 months ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you've got product evolution, you've got product change, you've got a lot of stuff that happens in there. Yeah. I mean, I've had a little bit of exposure to that doing work in 2000, 2001 around the world. And it's actually remarkable, right, that it actually works at all sometimes when one looks at it. Question, would I iPhone 10? Yes. Did I order one? Yes. Right. My mate's getting me one? Yes. Right. From my point of view, and I think this may be something that Apple maybe overlooked, the scale of it. What they've done with 10 for the first time is they've put a real computer in your pocket. It is the first step towards pocket computing, if one looks at the specification, if one looks at what the machine can do, right, from a processing point of view.
I'm sure Samsung would disagree with that sentiment.
Well, you know, the problem is this. I can get the new Samsung anywhere, and I can't get the Apple, you see. So maybe there's a little bit of manipulation. Creating the hype, you know. Steve was very good at that, you know.
And, you know, so you're an iPhone user then, are you, Richard?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
through and through.
Absolutely.
Been using it since the beginning, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's not one that I haven't had.
Okay.
And it'll actually, there's not one that I haven't had, but it's still current.
Right.
So one has to be careful with that statement. But I think my early affiliations with Apple in the 80s, once one was aligned with the people, first of all, and then the brand values, and then one watched the Steve Jobs journey of being kicked out on his ass by John Sculley, and, you know, the fact that that one could see what had to happen, right, to make the company work again. And the fact that it happened, and the fact that he came back for a dollar and all of those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were all things that were in my life before the book was ever written by Walter Isaacson.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
There's a crowd of us out there that are all 55 models. You know, Gates is a 55 model. Steve was a 55 model. And, what's interesting, of course, is that the 55 models, right, that are the most successful ones, are the ones that are left-handed and dyslexic, because both Jobs and Gates are left-handed and dyslexic, and so am I. So.
Here we go.
I'm in hallowed company. Yeah. If only I'd been 100 millionth as good as both of them are, then I would have been fine. You know?
Or bought those bitcoins many years ago, then you'll be fine.
Bought some.
Got some stashed.
Some pieces, yes. That was another thing that everybody going.
What price did you pay?
What was the? I can't remember. What was the entry price?
Oh, it was like fractions of a cent.
Yeah. It was. I think I was about $20 or something. I don't know.
Oh wow. Okay. So you're sitting on a gold mine.
Yeah.
No, there was only a few. It was a test. It was something that I became interested in, not so much from a virtual currency or a cryptocurrency point of view at the time, but it was a technology, the technology aspect, and it was having the best understanding possible, okay, of the underlying tech. Because I really believe that underlying tech will also be a very, very key part right, of what we do in healthcare and being involved in
the blockchain.
The blockchain.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the utilization of that 5, 6, 7 years ago, right, and more specifically 4 years ago in the healthcare environment, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And it really is. And there were a lot of other South Africans that saw it at the same time, Vinnie Lingham being one.
Yeah. Vinnie's been hugely successful.
Indeed.
Have you had a look at Civic, his new venture?
I have.
Yeah, it's impressive.
He spoke to me about it before he launched it.
Actually. Okay.
He visited us at CSR.
Oh, right. Okay.
He didn't have very good things to say about the government either, so.
I'm sure.
He's quite.
He's quite vocal on that, yeah.
No, he's a good lad, yeah. He's out there, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other guys like, what's his name? Stan C. Sean. You know what we should do, Duncan? We should do a podcast on South Africans that have been successful and not be hung up on Mark Shuttleworth.
Mm.
Well, 4 years ago when I was talking about Elon Musk to the PhDs at CSR, nobody knew who he was. There are others out there that are as successful.
Yeah, plenty of them.
That are hidden.
Rudolf Buerta, David Frankel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are lots of guys out there. And guys, some of us probably haven't even heard of who are doing amazing things.
Stanley C. Shong, right?
I don't know that name.
No, he's a medical doctor.
Okay.
Went to UCT, did his time in East London, in the system. He's the richest man in LA. He owns the LA Dodgers. He's the most influential in biotech platforms in the world.
Wow.
Wow.
I must Google him after the show.
He's proper. There's things happening out there that people are doing.
Yeah.
Rudolf Buerta, yes. I played soccer with his father. We worked together, The Economist. We worked together at Ritter Mills.
Right.
He was a good soccer player because he spent a lot of his life in Europe because Puck was the ambassador. So, yeah, we had soccer players.
His grandfather was Puck Buerta. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Sure. Smart guys in that family, actually. Is Puck Buerta still alive?
Yes, he is indeed. Very much so.
Yo, he must be old.
He is, but understand, I think he's a good man to take an interview with. He's still there.
Yes.
He's still up there. I mean,
yes.
I see Peter now and again,
the
musician's son, who I've known for many, many years.
Yeah, a bit of the black sheep of the family.
Oh, well, he's always a black sheep, yeah. And, I look at him and, you know, he says that him and his dad have great arguments, but when I see them and I look at the way that they carry themselves and they talk, right, there's more than a similarity, you know.
Right.
One can't wish the genes away. And then, of course, there's Puck's brother, who is a very, very successful engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's his daughter, Dr. Lisbeth Buerta, who's one of the top AI people in the world, one of the top machine learning people in the world. And, yeah, there's some interesting Buertas out there.
Yeah.
Bright ones.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's coincidentally, I think the book launches tomorrow. If we look at Puck's brother, right, he was married to Lisa. And she was the boss lady at the University of Stellenbosch for many years. And I've looked into a little bit of her history. Remarkable woman. Remarkable. And there's a book being launched about her life tomorrow, I believe.
Okay.
So there we have. The Buertas have been covered too.
Yeah. Yeah, but doing a podcast on that subject would be fascinating.
I think it would be. It would
be good to get some of these guys on the podcast as well.
I think we'd get some people to call in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they'd be keen, actually. I don't know if we'd get Elon, but...
maybe not. Maybe not, but there were some others that we could, and if we were, I think it would be good.
Mm. Yeah, you're right.
And I think it's something, you know, well, is it positive? Yes. Is it negative? Yes. You know, the common denominator when we look at most of these people is they're not here anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we have to also be very frank and take their views on that subject as well. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our sponsors may not like us, so.
Great. Well, that discussion covers the news and plenty else besides. But let's get on to our regular features. I couldn't find a loser. I don't know if Rechot or Richard, you have someone you'd like to pick on this week for doing something stupid or it's quite easy to pick on the politicians. But
yeah.
I can't think of one that stood out this week particularly.
No, they were all equally bad.
So we won't have a loser this week. And I think Jeff Bezos is our obvious winner this week. Fantastic results from Amazon and very likely at the close of trade in the U.S. today to be the new world's richest man. Quite an accomplishment for someone who started out selling stuff online 20 years ago.
Some books.
Who would have thought?
The books. It was
some books, yeah.
Sell some books online.
Yeah. Now he's the world's richest man.
But he's building retail bricks too.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, very
interesting. Maybe omnichannel is another subject for another podcast.
Yeah. He bought Whole Foods.
Yeah, Whole Foods is a big one.
Yeah. That's a grocery retailer. I mean, sure. Who would have thought?
But that's nutrition and health.
Yeah.
It's a building block.
And it's a distribution network.
Yes. He also bought a newspaper in his private capacity.
He did. He did. And he's in a race with Musk to get to Mars.
However, if you have a man on a bicycle that goes past the house every day to throw a newspaper onto the veranda, he can carry something else.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. What about that logistics?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Richard, what's your pick this week?
So I've been playing with a little speaker set. This was launched very recently, called the Logitech Wonder Boom. And I'll just switch it on and give you a little sound demo. That's just a little sound.
I saw one of these the other day. Yeah,
it was, cool. I think they had them at the Logitech launch.
Yes, they did.
It goes for about R1,500. It's essentially a 360 speaker,
it's
which
waterproof,
is fantastic.
Right?
It's IPX7 waterproof, yeah. So, you can splash it in water. The sound is actually pretty fantastic. But, okay, so let me just describe what it looks like. It's a little round canister-looking, ball-looking speaker. But what is really nice, like I said, is it's got 360-degree sound. So as soon as I put on some tunes, you'll actually hear that it'll play music. So you can put this in the middle of a table, and everybody can listen to music. But the sound quality and the bass, the low-end notes, is pretty impressive. I'll just turn it up a little bit. I'll probably clip the mics, but you can hear it. I mean, that is not bad, eh? I mean, this is a little room, and it's not even max. I'm still halfway there, so I've been very impressed with this. For R1,500, this is kind of the speaker that I would carry with me all the time. Now, I'm coming from a place where I've got a Jawbone, which retailed for roughly the same price, also a good speaker, but this one just seems to step up its game a little bit.
It's got nice bass, yeah.
Very nice bass. I mean, obviously, you were holding it, Richard, but if you put it on a table, you know, the wood also kind of amplifies a little bit of it. So I find it, just putting it on my desk, you know, it's been a nice way to listen to music.
Just turn the sound up again so we can have a listen.
Let me do this again.
Yeah, that's very good.
I mean, if you put it, depending on the song too, I mean, the rock obviously has got a certain audio profile, but electronic music sounds absolutely fantastic on this because obviously that music is designed with really nice bass that makes use of what a speaker can produce. This is definitely the kind of thing I'll be carrying with me. One of the people in the office already said they've bought them on Takealot just after listening to this because it was that impressive. So I think the people have spoken and I'm pretty impressed with it.
It looks robust.
Yeah, no, it is.
And it looks like it will survive my 19-year-old son.
Oh, yes.
That's a plus.
At the launch that I went to a few weeks ago, they had these inside fish tanks. And they were playing music inside the fish tank.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't tried that yet. I don't have a fish tank. But
And it's Logitech.
It's a Logitech one.
Hey, go Joost, man. It's a proper speaker.
Yes. Yeah, we did do an interview with Joost 2 weeks ago on the Best in Tech podcast. And, this is one of the things that I've been playing with since then. And, I'm very, very impressed. Definitely worth checking out. Go for a demo in a store if you can, just to listen to the audio.
What's the recommended retail price?
R1,500.
No, it's not bad.
It's not bad at all. I mean, it's definitely much better value than the Jawbone I bought 2-3 years ago, and the audio is much better. Mm. And obviously, it's waterproof. And it's got a nice little loop there that you can hook onto your bag. So
And the 360 makes it. Cause
the 360 is very nice, yeah. So, I mean, no directional audio. It's just audio in every direction, which is fantastic.
Cool. My pick this week is an app called Teleport. Nothing serious at all. It runs on iOS and on Android. And for some reason, it is no longer opening because I installed an update and it now says your device seems to be root enabled, which it is certainly not. Please disable to run this app. Oh, that's interesting. Well, I can describe it to you. I wanted to show it, but I can describe it to you. It's called Teleport. And you take a photo of yourself or a friend and you can do all sorts of crazy things with that picture, like change the color of your hair, change your skin color.
Oh, nice.
Do all sorts of weird things. Put backgrounds in so it looks like you're in the Rocky Mountains. It's quite gimmicky, but the way they've done it is pretty good. There's lots of fun stuff to do in there. You can make your hair pink and your skin green.
We've got some pretty impressive algorithms at the back end
Designed
to pick out all these colors that you want to change.
Yeah. There are quite a lot of these apps in the various stores, but this one is particularly fun. So if you, particularly if you've got kids and you're looking for a bit of fun over the weekend, I can highly recommend the Teleport app. Although I'm not sure why my S8 is telling me that my phone is rooted when I try to open it.
Switch it off and on again, that should solve it.
Probably.
A standard three-finger salute. Single button today.
Yes. Just hold down the power button for 10 seconds, yeah. Or pull the battery out if you can.
Yeah. No control.
Not
delete.
On Apple.
Not on Apple, no. No. And I think that's our show. Apart from our quiz results, Rafa, do you want to do the first
one? Sure. The first question in this week's quiz. A new submarine cable is headed to South Africa's shores. What is it called? And the answer there is the IOX cable system.
Which two technology industry titans are dueling for the title of world's richest person? And that's, of course, Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates.
The third question. What is the name of the SAP board member who is dealing with the company's Gupta kickback scandal in South Africa? And the answer, Adair Fox-Martin.
If Spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz band was released immediately, what would the price of a 1 gigabyte data bundle fall to, according to MTN South Africa CEO Godfrey Motzer? And that's 50 Rand.
Not bad. And the last question. AMD has a new line of desktop processors that it's hoping will help it gain market share from rival Intel. What is the processor line called? And the answer there is Ryzen.
And that's our show. Richard, I know we collared you in here at the last moment to join us on the podcast. So thanks for making the time. And
thank you.
It's been a great, great discussion and good to catch up with you.
Well, thank you very much.
Rehat, I will see you again next Friday. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, info@techcentral.co.za is the email address. We'd love to hear from you. We read all your feedback. So until next Friday, cheers.
Ta-ta.
Bye-bye.